sometimes invoked by the vanquished and respected by the victors. Their cruelty and lust were moderated by the authority of the chiefs and feelings of the soldiers. For we are no longer describing an eruption of the northern savages, and however ferocious they might still appear, time, policy, and religion had civilized the manners of the French, and still more of the Italians. But a free scope was allowed to their avarice, which was glutted even in the Holy Week by the pillage of Constantinople. The right of victory, unshackled by any promise or treaty, had confiscated the public and private wealth of the Greeks, and every hand, according to its size and strength, might lawfully execute the sentence and seize the forfeiture. A portable and universal standard of exchange was found in the coined and uncoined metals of gold and silver, which each captor, at home or abroad, might convert into the possessions most suitable to his temper and situation. Of the treasures which trade and luxury had accumulated, the silks, velvets, furs, the gems, spices, and rich movables were the most precious, as they could not be procured for money in the ruder countries of Europe. An order of rapine was instituted, nor was the share of each individual abandoned to industry or chance. Under the tremendous penalties of perjury, excommunication and death, the Latins were bound to deliver their plunder into the common stock. Three churches were selected for the deposit and distribution of the spoil. A single share was allotted to a foot soldier, two for a sergeant on horseback, four to a knight, and larger proportions according to the rank and merit of the barons and princes. For violating this sacred engagement, a knight belonging to the Count of St. Paul was hanged with his shield and coat of arms round his neck. His example might render similar offenders more artful and discreet, but avarice was more powerful than fear, and it is generally believed that the secret far exceeded the acknowledged plunder. Yet the magnitude of the prize surpassed the larger scale of experience or expectation. After the whole had been equally divided between the French and Venetians, 50,000 marks were deducted to satisfy the debts of the former and the demands of the latter. The residue of the French amounted to 400,000 marks of silver, about £800,000. Nor can I better appreciate the value of that sum in the public and private transactions of the age than by defining it as seven times the annual revenue of the Kingdom of England.
The collapse of the Greek emperors and the desecration of Constantinople by the French and Venetian pilgrims meant that the empire was now a mere husk. The French and Venetians agreed to divide and administer the city through 12 electors, with a majority choosing the Emperor of the East, and they first selected Baldwin, Count of Flanders and Hainault. The Greek citizens of Constantinople were excluded from all civil and military office.
But peace was banished, and industry was crushed in the disorders of the feudal system. The Roman emperors of Constantinople, if they were endowed with abilities, were armed with power for the protection of their subjects. Their laws were wise, and their administration was simple. The Latin throne was filled by a titular prince, the chief and often the servant of his licentious confederates. The fiefs of the empire, from a kingdom to a castle, were held and ruled by the sword of the barons, and their discord, poverty, and ignorance extended the ramifications of tyranny to the most sequestered villages. The Greeks were oppressed by the double weight of the priest, who was invested with temporal power, and of the soldier, who was inflamed by fanatic hatred, and the insuperable bar of religion and language forever separated the stranger and the native. As long as the Crusaders were united at Constantinople, the memory of their conquest and the terror of their arms imposed silence on the captive land. Their dispersion betrayed the smallness of their numbers and the defects of their discipline, and some failures and mischances revealed the secret that they were not invincible. As the fear of the Greeks abated, their hatred increased. They murmured, they conspired, and before a year of slavery had elapsed, they implored or accepted the succor of a barbarian whose power they had felt and whose gratitude they trusted.
By the early 14th century, the empire in the East had become greatly circumscribed. Much of the previous century had been occupied by crusading armies.